Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Drive to Win. I'm Justin Bell, your host. Drive to Win is presented by The Win Las Vegas and brought to you by Mobil 1 for the love of driving. Well, what a race that was. Incredible. I've got to say that all the action came out of Canada, and it was just outrageous in so many ways, which is fitting. Well, my guest today is Jacques Villeneuve, former Formula One world champion. We'll get into that, but definitely one of the most outspoken guys and the perfect guest for this week. So what did we have? We had rain, we had spins, we had pressure, we had bravery, we had tension, we had drama, we had strategy, great strategy, bad strategy. It was just spectacular to watch. One of those races that really reminded you why you love Formula One. It's sort of the apex of all those different elements coming together. To be honest, I could say that any one of three or four guys won at the weekend. I mean, if you made zero mistakes, you could have won. But everybody did make mistakes. So it wasn't quite as simple. But gosh, so many people left the track thinking, it could have been me, it could have been my time. Now, it wasn't just because of the track, but also it was the past few races have been building up to this with Lando's victory. You've just seen these moments coming together and the dominance of Max Verstappen and the Red Bull just on the edge of being threatened in more ways than one. And I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, for example, qualifying, Max Verstappen, George Russell did exactly the same qualifying time down to 0.1 of a second. Think about that on a 3+ mile circuit. And then you come over the line. You couldn't even do it with our hands against the stopwatch. Just spectacular. And you knew that was a scene set, right? So you knew going into Sunday what was going to happen. It was going to be absolutely a barnstormer. I mean, the weather plus those individual performances plus all the strategy really ended up with this performance distilling down into something very thrilling to watch. The podium was Max Verstappen taking the top spot, but then Lando Norris and George Russell taking the other two places on the podium. It wasn't as simple as that because that weather was so threatening all weekend. It really did unfold in the best way possible. So before we get into the race, just a couple of bits of news on the driver's dancing front, so to speak. What's hot and what's not? Well, what's definitely hot is the fact that Carlos Sainz, we're on tenterhooks. Where will he end up? And it really is down to the two options as other seats start to close down. You've got the Sauber Audi deal, and then you have Williams pushing super hard for his services. James Fowles, you know, who's running, heading up the Williams team, he's pushing so hard to have Carlos join, and with good reason. I think he's making a very tempting carrot. He's giving it all the big guns, which must be very flattering, but Carlos, it seems, is so, well, the way he's putting it across in the media is he says that he is so occupied with just trying to stay relevant and dominant in the Ferrari seat, doing the best they can. And he and his management really do need to sit down and strategize on what they're going to do. I guess the unintended or maybe intended consequence of that is I'm sure his stock just keeps going up and his price tag too. So we'll see that coming. I just wonder. Let me know on social media what you think, which direction he might go. Now, what's not hot, and I'm sure I'd love to have break bread with Sergio Perez. I'm sure I would really enjoy his company. He's a multiple race winner. He's won all the way up through his career. But he just signed a 2-year extension with Red Bull. And I, for one, just can't work it out. I'm really looking forward to talking with Jack about that. I mean, obviously, it shows the importance of the South American Latin market. But wow, it must be great for his bank account. But is it great for the team? And I just think they must have been on the pit wall looking at that absolutely dismal performance he had from qualifying all the way through the race. And they must have been going, where is that performance clause? Do we got to find it here? Yeah, big red letters. If he doesn't perform, he can be thrown out. I wonder what that looks like, but he can't just have these results. And the way I look at it is when you're at the top of, when you're on the way up, let's just say, you can have these glimpses of brilliance that showcase your talents to everybody, the media, rival teams, your team management, the fans. It makes them go, oh my God, there's something special there. Logan Sargeant, we've been waiting for that, just as an example. What is that just glimpse of the diamond that you need to be at the top? When you're at the top, guys, you've got to be delivering all the time, like Max does. You can't, once in a while, maybe a bum weekend, but just you've got to be there. Like, you don't have pitchers just, I don't even know anything about baseball. I was in the restaurant I was in last night. I mean, you can't just like throw one on the ground and then, you know, do 10 bad ones and one good one. It just doesn't make any sense. You've got to be at that level with only 20 seats going the best. So let's see what happens. What is great is I'm very happy that Yuki Tsunoda is staying with RB Racing through the end of 2025. He's been so strong this year. He's matured as a driver. He's very fast, important for the Japanese market. And I'm a big fan. Of course, he's been on Drive to Win, which makes it rather good. So we have a little more vested interest. But yeah, I'm really happy he's staying there, which of course throws the Ricciardo seat into even more doubt. But we'll cover that a bit later. So thinking about the race, I mean, I was taking some notes as I watched it. And once again, Max, even though the cards he was dealt were not perfect, he had to really push. He was strong. He was consistent. And as he does, has that ability to discard all the noise around him and become absolutely ruthless in his execution. He stops the distraction. You very seldom hear him double. I mean, he does talk with his engineer a lot and they question each other and they push each other, but they have this unity in their direction. And I just think it's very impressive. And yeah, he did make a couple of mistakes, which you don't get to say too often, but boy, he just delivers, which is the mark of a champion. And he loves racing. I mean, he loves racing. In the post-race interview, he's just like, bring it on. And that, I think, is what you got to remember. He has cut his teeth since he was a kid with his dad, Jos, pushing him in carts. And 60 wins, 50 out of the last 75 races. Sink that in, guys. That's wild. And obviously, in contrast, Sergio Perez thing was dismal. Helmut Marko, by the way, said he has psychological issues, which I'm sure in sportsman's terms is a real kiss of death. So 2 years may seem like an eternity if we get there. McLaren, it's been definitely a McLaren week. Before we do that, can I tell you what I'm doing this week? I'm heading to Le Mans for the Le Mans 24 Hours with my dad. It's 29 years. I know, it's tough to imagine me being older than that. 29 years since my dad and I and Andy Wallace took third on the podium overall in the infamous now Harrods McLaren F1 GTR. In the rain, had a clutch release bearing go near the end, got overtaken. But I mean, Mario Andretti finished second with Michael. I mean, what an epic. And they're basically creating some really good legacy content. And we're doing a road trip from McLaren's Technology Center, MTC, tomorrow, to driving down to Le Mans and filming our nostalgic thoughts and memories and everything on the way. So I will let you know when that video is out, but it's definitely a McLaren thing. Oh, and I went and drove that Solus GT last week, which was absolutely balmy. I'll put a little picture up of what I did. It was just so cool to drive, revved to 10,200 revs, only $6 million. But back to the real issue. McLaren, so strong. They really did have the pace to be the winners this weekend. And when Lando, he lit up his tires perfectly. He got them into the window so well and took the lead and just drove off very Max-like. And I thought, wow, this is a done deal. He looks so confident. He's got that swagger, hasn't he, right now? But then that whole yellow flag, picking up the pace car, safety car, out of sequence, and he did another lap because he'd done another lap. Basically, he lost his 8-second delta straight away. And I'm sure they went heavy in their debrief on quite what they did. But he did have time to make the pit lane if they called box as he came down, because he was like a second and a half away from it. But he didn't He didn't get in time and could have, would have, but it didn't work out for him. But he knows he should have won. He looks super confident. And now he's got that Miami win under his belt. I will say he's got that swagger. He's come back. So no wonder he was disappointed and frustrated talking to the media after the race. But again, a sign of maturity. I really like the fact he went, hey, listen, the pace car swung in my direction in Miami. I won. Here it didn't. And I didn't. So I think you just saw the man that's coming through. And my two favorite moments of the race, one of them, is his spirited drive was outstanding. And when, you know, he was racing to get out of the pits, do you remember that? With Max coming down, you could see that great shot. He's coming towards us. He's exiting the pits. And he came out in the wet as the pit lane exit was obviously wetter than the dry line. And he's wah, bah, bah, sideways all the way down the road trying to at least stay in front of Max, which would never have happened. But it was just great to see a Formula One car wrapped up sideways. And I think they both laughed about it in the post-race room, when the green room, and they showed that slot and that little clip, and Lando was just like, whoa. I mean, so very, very cool. Obviously, an Oscar was just on fire too. And his pace was remarkable. He's so calm, so collected. And yeah, he won that sprint race last year, but he wants to get a big race, a full Formula One victory under his fingers. And I definitely know that is why, they're so good. As Zach Brown said, I have the two best drivers, the best driver lineup on the grid. And I think he's right in so many ways. So Mercedes, who would have thought that they would have, evolved so fast coming into this weekend, their ramp up on their upgrades and where the car is and dealing with some of their issues, because they really have had issues especially with the front end of the car and traction and from the rear. And here they were, George Russell on pole, but on the same lap time as Max. He got it first. So stunning. And Mercedes, though, must be ruining their pit stop strategies, because I do think they could have had two cars on the podium, which would have been amazing. But it really was all about tire choice in these very difficult conditions. And Russell did drive brilliantly, didn't he? I mean, I really enjoyed it. Showed his potential. And he's only won one race before, but his strong pace, he did make a mistake. I think some media are picking up on he's a guy that makes mistakes right at the wrong moment. I don't want to jump on that bandwagon. I think it's just part of pushing that car way beyond its comfort level. It's not nice to drive, but he's right there. And even a sporty little duel with his teammate Lewis for position. Lewis responded, got the fastest lap of the race. So are Mercedes back in the game? We'll obviously see this weekend and 2 weekends in Barcelona whether that's come through. But interesting sort of personality things coming through. George, even though he was in third, was very disappointed with the overall, because he knows he could have won. That's a sign of a racer. And Lewis was really tough on himself, thought he had one of the worst races in his racing professional career, which probably is a little bit tough, but it just shows these guys, when you can tell that your equipment is starting to be up to your skill level, and it means you should win races, I think that's when the frustration starts to come in. So looking really, really, really good. And I think going into Barcelona could be a little bit more wide open. Now, you know, I love Ferrari. If you listen and watch to this show, and you know, for so many reasons, I think everybody does, but what a disastrous weekend. From hero to zero in 14 days. I mean, it was, for Charles Leclerc, that high of winning in Monaco, the feeling he conquered the world, childhood dreams and all that. And then you get to Canada, and it, basically they couldn't hit their own backside with two hands. It was, I don't know how, why, what, I don't know what caused it, but limited track running definitely affected them, especially trying to get the tires into that temperature range optimization. They struggled in the wet, and the powertrain issue for Leclerc was definitely raising its head. Then Carlos had that spin, clipped the inside curb, bit of a lazy spin, rolled back across the track and tagged Albon, which was so unfortunate for him. Totally not his fault. But, I mean, both Ferraris out of the race by the end. And how do they regroup for the next race? Well, Fred Vasseur certainly is the guy to do that, to bring them, you know, together as a united front. And they just have to write the weekend off as an absolute abject failure. Can't imagine what that call to Ferrari management was like. But afterwards, why? But they will be back, I'm sure, into the fast sweeping turns of Barcelona. Other things that caught my eye. Well, Aston Martin, what a very good weekend for them in the end. I mean, Lance really is extracting the most out of the car. And they were sixth and seventh. And as he said, you know, when he's responding to criticism, and I've also been a bit tough on him from my armchair, which seems a bit unfair. And maybe I'm just jealous. But he is performing right up to the level of his illustrious teammate, Fernando Alonso. And as he said, listen, most people in this paddock rate Fernando as one of the best, and I'm beating him. So how do you think I'm doing? That's the right answer, my son. So we'll see what they do moving on, but maybe it's the start of an upward trend for them. The thing is, with this upward trend for all these teams, what's going to happen? It's going to get even tighter at the front end if you introduce Aston into the mix. Don't think they're ready to compete for podiums again, but right now. But boy, that top half of the field is going to be just coming alive, electric. Daniel Ricciardo and Red Bull. Now, he had a pretty decent weekend, despite what my guest said about him beforehand. We're going to get into that with Jack. How I don't think we cannot. He made some comments about his position in Formula One, and that he really shouldn't be there anymore. And the social media went absolutely balmy, but he responded and had actually a very, very good run in qualifying and then ran pretty well in the race. So he's fighting for a seat, guys. Otherwise, he's going to be in sports cars. Not a bad thing, but he'll be in sports cars. Alex Albon, his overtake when he threaded the needle between Ricciardo and Ocon on that, where the DRS was open, and they're coming down into that last chicane, the way he slid his car through was a bit of a Hail Mary, but kind of brilliant, I've got to say. I really enjoyed watching him do that. And it was one of those ones that if it hadn't worked out, it would have been a disaster. Everyone would have been calling him reckless, but that is the nature of the sport. If you go for it, then you are definitely a racer. So I really enjoyed watching that. Obviously Alpine were in the top 10 with both drivers. They didn't hit each other. That's a pretty change from the last few races. But there was definitely a bit of aggro between Gasly and Ocon in those final few laps, because Ocon was instructed to let his teammate through because they needed to try and pass RB with Daniel Ricciardo. But it never happened. And he let him pass with the explicit guarantee from the pit wall that they would let him repass again so he could get the points. But the deal was reneged on right near the end on that last lap. He was saying, no, we're not going to let you pass. He must, steam coming out of his ears. And quite rightly, he was that upset. But remember, the team on the pit wall have all the information, all the data to their hands, and they're the ones that can make the best decisions. And it turns out that they were just worried about the power unit issues both cars were having could have made almost both of them vulnerable from a pass from the fast approaching Haas of Hülkenberg. So they knew what was going on, but it doesn't make it easier for Ocon, because as a driver, you know, you're in the car, especially near the end, you've given it everything. You survived the wet, you've driven on slicks in the wet, you've held it together, and you're so wrapped up. If any of you have ever played a sport, you know what I'm talking about. If there's right at the end, you're so immersed in it that your emotions are on literally revving into the red zone. And it's very tough to let your teammates get more points for you when every single one of them counts, especially when you feel you were let down by the team. But you know what? They probably made the right decision for them, but it's all about the team, as they said, not just about the driver. But what about Kevin Magnussen on those opening few laps? He was running the full super wets, and just, they were the only guys, the Haas, and he was electric. For all, you know, all that negativity about sometimes what Kevin says, sometimes the way he races, he is an explosive driver that brings a lot of entertainment to Formula One. And given the opportunity, he was so sporty. I likened him to like a Jack Russell humping your leg the other day. He's kind of like that. He never gives up. But he went past every single person in front of him on his way to fourth place. And it was just spectacular. Now, did it work out in the end? They kind of did an early pit stop and pretty much blew the opportunity to be right up there. I mean, would they have been able to keep it in those changing conditions? Maybe. But just seeing what he did, it just, you know, that's what racing's all about, isn't it? It's about pushing the edge. And I think that's why Kevin, you know, he's electric when he's on the way. It just showed everybody that's how you do it if you get on the right tires. So, guys, you don't need to go 200 miles an hour to outrun your inbox or pull multiple Gs around corners just to decline a phone call. You don't even have someone waving a yellow flag to tell you to slow down and look around. Basically, you really don't need to be a professional driver to disconnect and break free. All you have to do is drive. Mobile One, for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/drive to win to learn all about it. So now let me introduce my guest, Jacques Villeneuve, son of racing legend Gilles Villeneuve. Jacques was the second driver after Mario Andretti to win the F1 World Championship, the kart title, and the Indianapolis 500. He was also Canada's first F1 World Champion. He's outspoken, independent, and with a raw talent that made him a winner in nearly every discipline of the sport. It's a huge honor to have him join me on the show, because he really traditionally hates doing much media, but, well, he used to when he was younger, which was very much his trademark. But hey, we all mellow a little bit with age. At least I hope so. Well, Jacques, thanks for joining Drive to Win. I know it was a busy weekend up there in Canada for you.
I was extremely busy, and the weather didn't help. And also all the police in the area, they were wanting to show everyone they were the boss. So it was, they went over the top blocking people. It's as if part of the town didn't want the Grand Prix to happen, and they were making life difficult for everyone, which is a shame because it's such a great venue.
Yeah. I mean, I always hear from the mechanics and everybody, even when sports cars went there, they love going to Montreal. It's like one of the funnest racetracks. Funniest cities everyone to go out in. But even as a Canadian, you felt everything was a bit heavy-handed then.
Oh, this year there's road works everywhere. And it felt like a dead town somehow. I've never seen Montreal without a soul. And that's the first time I see that. So that was the weirdest thing. And at least at the racetrack, no, the atmosphere was there, the people, the energy. So that was great. Even though it was freezing and raining, the people were there like they always are. So as a race venue, it was amazing. It was fun, and we had a great race. That's what we want.
We really did, right? I mean, it was obviously I'm sitting at home watching it, but you could see from qualifying it was lining up to be a great race, especially with Mercedes right up there. For you watching it as it unfolded, I mean, it was good entertainment on the spot live as well, wasn't it?
It was good because everyone, the teams, the drivers, everything, everyone had a part to play. Sometimes it's all down to strategies and so on. Where now the drivers also had their word to say in the race, and that made it fun. And nobody knew what was going to happen. You saw that from practice, from qualifying. It was a new asphalt that reacted very differently than other asphalt on the calendar. It dried super quickly when it was wet, surprisingly quickly, to the point where teams and drivers didn't know when was the right time to change tires. And this unknown always was going to create a very good race. And that's what we had. Ultimately, it's still Max that won, but not because the car was superior, just because they really, really worked that race really well. You just have to see the difference with Perez.
I mean, yeah, we can get into that in a second. Jeez. But there was moments in those races, as a former driver like you, you can relate to situations, right? And you go, God, that must feel good. Like just Kevin Magnussen on those super wets, you know, he was having the best time of his life.
Oh, he was having a blast. I mean, he had grip that no one else had, but at the same time, know, having raced quite a few times in the wet.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that at that point, the tire was going to be wrong. That unless a safety car came out, it wasn't going to pan out, because then you would never reach the point where it was time for slicks when you're in the extra wet. You will always have to go through the intermediates, and that won't be long enough for you to catch up and go back through the field. And it also looked like the intermediates got better at some point once they got used. So it didn't pan out, but it made for a good show, and that's all we were wanting.
What do you think about, you know, for Mercedes right up there? It almost was, they had, you know, they've been off the pace for a long time. We've seen them improving after the last couple of races. Obviously, two amazing drivers with Lewis and George. It's interesting, though, in that team situation when one driver's leaving a team. George is obviously quicker over one lap right now, but Lewis's experience pays out in the race. In under race conditions, how do you view that with them? How do you view like the older driver with the more experienced one with the kid that's really, you know, going to lead the team next year?
Well, I guess it's more that the driver with that is originally the Mercedes driver that has won everything with them is leaving the team, so he's not the team leader anymore. His image, his experience, it's still present, but there's that one tenth missing, maybe because he's had enough. I don't know. Maybe he just needs a fresh air, fresh experience, which will be Ferrari. But right now, it's not working as it was in the past. In quali, when he has to push, there'll be the odd mistake, which won't get him that last tenth of a second, which George manages to get right now. The issue with George is he loses focus during the races. He's often made mistakes in the races, and Toto had to come on the radio to tell him to focus, and then he got back on it again, but that could have cost a second place or even a win, because the Mercedes had the pace definitely. Lewis is qualifying cost him for the race, and then George's his little loss of focus.
Those are things, as you know, you can work on, right? I mean, Lewis, I don't think loses focus. If he loses focus, it's because he wants to. You know what I mean? As in, he's just pissed off at the situation. He doesn't randomly do it. But let's jump on to McLaren. I love their driver lineup. I think they're just on fire. You know, as a driver, when you win a race and you break that duck, suddenly you have a swagger, don't you? You know you can do it. And Lando is in that zone right now. I enjoy watching the way he drives. And I've thought of you because, you know, you're a guy that did like your dad. You did like movement in the car. You loved a bit of opposite lock. When he came out of the pit lane, obviously it was futile on cold tires. But, you know, when he came out trying to get ahead of Max, that was good, genuine stuff, wasn't it?
It was good. It was fun to watch. And, you know, when a driver has his first win, he's either a one-hit wonder or that will just start a continuation of wins. And I don't think he's a one-hit wonder. He seems to be the real stuff. So that's good. And you see it with his attitude on race weekends. Like Piastri is always quick, but somehow Lando seems to have a little bit of an upper edge most of the time. There in the race, I think he was a little bit frustrated because he was leading. He was super quick. Then they got cut out with the safety car that just came out a little bit too late for him to make it to the pit. So that was, let's say, unfair. The safety car should never come out like that. But I guess it was payback for the help he got in Miami. So it in the end, it balanced out. But after having missed that initial pit stop, they should have left him on the old tires and keep the lead instead of putting him back, pitting him a lap later. That I think was a little bit of a mistake, because we noticed afterwards that used intermediates actually worked. And that could have made a different race, because it would have forced Verstappen to be more aggressive. But ultimately, he got a good result, got good points in the championship. It was a good battle, and people still can see that he's in there with a fight.
Yeah, well summarized. Out of all the drivers, before we talk about Ferrari, out of all the drivers, who do you identify with? Who do you like? Whose style do you like the most?
I will say Max, because Max and Alonso. Yeah. And also because of his age, I can relate to it.
He's still, exactly.
He's still got the juice flowing. But Max, because he's always on it, it doesn't matter what the stakes are. If it's for a win, or even if he's won the 20 last races, he won't give up on one lap. That's all he is, a race car driver. And it feeds him. It's amazing.
You know, someone on social yesterday said that everyone always says, right, if you put this driver against this driver, Jim Clark with Stirling Moss against Fan, I mean, who would be faster? I can't remember who it was, but they said, if you did put Max and Senna and Michael Schumacher together, that Max is probably the guy that is the most consistent. Do you agree with that? He's the one that could probably win most.
He is, but don't forget we live in a different era where drivers in the past, every time they went to the racetrack, they thought that might be their last day. So the approach to living was very different. Physical training only really started a little bit with Prost, but mainly with Schumacher in my era. That's when we started to physically train. So that made a big difference. If you put a Fangio with the modern physical training, then he might have been a Max Verstappen as well. That's why it's very difficult to compare the eras. Now drivers don't test, they go in simulators instead. So, and they start when they're, 12, 13, yeah. 14, and 15 in Formula 4. It's the approach is so different that it's impossible to tell what a driver from the past, how he would be psychologically today and to race in the modern way of racing. Put a Max in those dangerous cars without a simulator, would he actually have survived his early years of racing? Would he have been able to always push on the limit and figure out where the limit is without the help of the simulator to figure it out first? Yeah. So that's why it's always impossible to compare. But if you just take him today with all the training he's had and the drivers of the past, of course, he is better, but a lot because of the training that he got.
That's great insight. I was just thinking to myself, I know when Michael Schumacher started training like that, were the rest of you like, oh, holy crap, we've got to raise our game now? I mean, because it's like everyone in sports car now, you know, the guys, you know, who race in the cars I used to race, they're doing triathlons and Ironman and stuff like that. I'm going, oh, God forbid I didn't have to do that. Right? Were you like, holy cow, Michael, back it down?
No, it wasn't because of Michael. I started figuring out that training was necessary when I was in IndyCar. Because, you know, I grew up a little bit the old fashioned way with my dad and the way racing was, where you were just proud and you were tough. So you didn't need the training because you were just a tough cookie. But there's a couple of races in IndyCar where actually like mid Ohio, August or July in the Midwest, where it's brutal, humid and hot. And halfway through the race, I was just hoping that I would crash. I didn't need to finish that race. And I was actually off the pace because I was just too tired. I still got a podium in the end, but the team stopped talking to me on the radio and I could feel that they had given up. They weren't there with me anymore. And that was a big message. And that's when I started understanding it would make a difference if I got fitter. And that's when then I went to F1 and I could gradually see the effect. And then training became a competition on its own, a challenge to always get stronger and stronger and stronger on itself, not just because of racing. So it became fun.
Our dads, you know, your dad obviously passed way too early, but they came from that generation, like you said, they didn't know whether they were going to walk away that weekend. But my dad also, there was no coach, there was no data. I mean, when I started, we were at Brands Hatch and I was in a little Formula 4 doing a test day. And I said, what do I do? He said, well, just take the line and eventually throw yourself in front of other people and they'll stay behind you. I was like, well, that's a lot of guidance, Dad. You know what I mean? But he just was like natural. He just went out. I imagine your dad was the same in his style was so natural, which you got a natural style, but we really had to figure it out on our own.
I think that's how it was until the mid late 90s. And it was proud in it of not needing a coach, mental coach. Yeah. And I still have a hard time to accept or to respect a driver that needs that. I still believe that if you're going to be good, you have to be able to be self-taught, because that's the only way you'll improve. That's the only way you'll learn from your mistakes and figure out, okay, that was wrong. What could I do better? And then you figure out a way to do it yourself. You don't need someone or there to put it in your mind and figure it out. Alonso is like that. He doesn't need a mental coach. He doesn't need anyone to tell him what to do. And a certain level, Max is a little bit the same. He had his father, kicking it in him during all growing up, but he doesn't need a mental coach. He knows what he's doing and he learns on his own. So he's a little bit old fashioned in that. And ultimately, the drivers who don't need the coaching are the ones who will get better, because they will always figure out a way to become better and to beat the opposition.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right, because you hear it. Max will say to his guy, even Lando, it's like, just back off, guys. That's useless information. Or tell me what I freaking need to know. Don't dance around it. I mean, it's the communication is quite fun to listen to.
Not everyone likes communication. No. I remember when I got an F1, there was no communication, but I was used to it coming from IndyCar. It wasn't as much as you have in NASCAR with spotters, but there was still a lot of communication going on, and they weren't used to that in F1. So Jock Clear was my engineer at the time, who's at Ferrari now, and we started putting that in place, even at the race starts, to see, because you can't see everything in your mirrors. So you could watch the TV and kind of tell me where the traffic was. So we put it in place, but we've noticed that a lot of drivers don't want to be. On the other hand, I prefer to have the communication, because then you don't feel alone.
Yeah.
And it helps you focus. If once in a while your brain can move on to something else.
Yeah, I was saying, I don't mind being told the gap to the guy behind, even though I can see him. It kind of is a motivator. So I imagine Ferrari rolled off the boat, so to speak, into Canada with, like, you know, red banners raised high, full
maybe
of,
they were still on the boat.
Maybe they were still on the boat, right? So what was the vibe in the pit paddock when they just were objectively horrific right from the start? They must have lost their sort of libido instantly. And what was the gossip of why that was happening?
No idea. Nobody figured it out. I was expecting them.
Especially them, Jack. Especially them. They didn't figure it out. Yeah.
Because they have a very well-rounded car. It's good. It's not the best in anything, but it's super good at everything. And Montreal was a good track for that. They're good in slow speed corners. They're good in long straight lines. So Montreal should have been amazing for them, and it wasn't. So I don't know if they were still in their party mode from Monaco and just enjoying it, and got there thinking they were the king of the hill, and suddenly everybody's going just that little bit quicker. And they didn't have time to react because the conditions didn't allow them to work. So they just stayed on the back foot the whole weekend. And then the drivers didn't. Well, Sainz made a mess of it. It wasn't a really good race. And Leclerc was unlucky with the engine. There was an issue. So they took the risk of going on slicks. And that was the right thing to do. But then it's wet. Why would you put the driver on hard tires, the tire that doesn't warm up? That didn't make sense. And that's how you could tell they were always on the back foot. Because when you got back on the track and it was obviously undrivable, that within two laps, you would lose more than the cost of a pit stop, they still didn't pit him. So they were just playing catch up. It didn't work out. It was surprising. But keep in mind also, in between Monaco and Montreal, almost every team, put their new engines, the new spec, the second engine of the season. And maybe the Ferrari one wasn't as big a step as the others, but that's not something we can know from the outside.
Yeah, good point. Well, I do think they're going to, they're not going to be down for long. They'll come back in Barcelona, I'm sure. I know they, especially for Carlos, right?
But hold on. You see the difference with Barcelona, it's a lot of high-speed corners. And then you got Silverstone as well. That's high-speed corners is where lately, Ferrari has been at its weakest. So I really don't know what to expect there. I really thought Montreal was going to be the track and not Barcelona. But just take McLaren as an example. They keep saying, oh, this is not our kind of track. And that's where they've been quick every time. So everybody gets surprised at their own pace on the track where they're supposed to be slow and vice versa, which is really weird this year. And if you look at the Montreal grid, you lose a couple of tenths and you lose five spots. We've never had an F1 that was tied in qualifying. It used to be you lose a spot. Maybe instead of being P2 on the grid, it'll be P3 if you're 2 or 3 seconds tenths off. Now you're P8 instead of P2.
Yeah. Wow. when you are in the paddock, in the garage, is looking at the car, when you look at them out there, I mean, how how hard do you think those cars are to drive compared to your era in Formula One? You were so linear then. It was so visceral, right? These cars are so wide. They're so long. They're so heavy. They're so complex.
Well, I can't give you a real answer because 2 years ago, I tested the Alpine in Monza. Alpine of 3 years ago, the one that Mick Doohan has been testing over and over until he jumped into the new car. And it's the easiest car I've ever driven in my life. It was disappointing. It was super fast. I'd never been so fast in my life, but it felt like a very fast limo. Nothing was happening. My heartbeat was low. Everything was easy. And I couldn't hold my head in the corners in Monza. So I couldn't even see the corner, but it was still okay. I would just turn, get in the gas, and nothing would happen. It was simple. So I did all my running. Then Ocon jumped in the car and he only beat me by 9/10.
Wow.
And that's wrong.
That's wrong.
That is just wrong. And only because in Ascari, which was one corner, he beat me by 7/10 in that one corner. So some corners I was quicker than him, and some others. I was telling myself and looking at videos from the 90s, and even in Monza, it was hard to go straight in the straight line. We're fighting the car the whole time. So I don't know if it's because the cars are so heavy, that are so compliant. There's way too much downforce. And then when they get in race pace, because this was not quali trim, obviously, take Monaco. They were slower than the Formula 2. They were 12 seconds a lap, 10 seconds a lap slower than their quali pace because they have to slow down, massage the tires, massage the engine, the car, and everything. So it's just a different form of driving. But ultimately, take a Verstappen, and he does make the difference, even though the cars are easy to drive.
Yeah, he does. You know, I know you have your racing school, and I had a racing school. I know you have a track and everything. I use that analogy as well on modern day cars, right? When I used Dodge Vipers, I was racing for them at the time. No ABS, no traction control, manual gearbox, flat spotting tires left, right, and center. The gap between me and the other instructors and a really good student was 5 seconds or 6 seconds or something. Now, you know, when we drive around, in the coaching, now in a modern day McLaren road car, even a gentleman driver is only a second and a bit off us, right? The gap, the technology is doing so much for that driver. It's wild. So I think that I'd never thought of it, but that's probably the same in the Formula One cars. The technology still to extract the most out of it is very hard, right? To do what Max and Lando does, but you can get up to that threshold a lot easier, I think.
It is. Formula 2s are more difficult to drive. Indy cars are more difficult to drive. NASCARs are more difficult to drive. But the speeds are so high that when it does go wrong, it really goes wrong. And I think that's a little bit the issue with the cars being easier to drive. Now, the best drivers will still shine, but an average driver will be able to drive beyond his actual level of competence, and will still look okay until things become a little bit hairy. And that's when it goes wrong.
Yeah. Well, so when I'm on the I do this show after every Grand Prix, and I have a couple of storylines that I try not to get too in deep with, but it's impossible to. One is, you know, Sergio Perez. One is Logan Sargeant. One is Daniel Ricciardo on those seats that they take. And obviously you blew up the internet last Wednesday or Thursday with your comments about Ricciardo, which I totally understand where you were coming from. And maybe you got a role as a sports psychologist because he had his best race in a while right afterwards. Run through that a bit. I mean, you're right, man. You're right. There's 20 seats on that grid. You have to be the best you can be. And in any other sport, you'd be walked off the field, right? So it's crazy.
Well, the racing industry has changed because you used to be given a chance and 5 or 6 races. And if you weren't up to it, you would be sent home. First of all, because you would be dangerous to yourself. You were really off the pace. But now when you're off the pace, you're 2 or 3 cents off. So people think, oh, okay, that's not bad. But also with all the social media, you really build a huge following and image. So you bring that kind of value to the team, even if it's not on the racetrack. And because there's no testing, it's really hard for a new driver to come in. So teams often prefer to keep a known quantity because they know they won't be able to give enough testing to a new driver and to give him a fair chance. So sometimes it's just safer and easier to keep what you have, even if you know it's not good enough.
Did you bump into Daniel in person?
No, not at all. He had maple syrups on his helmet. I was wanting to see if it was real one or not. But obviously, it got under his skin because he reacted in a very childish manner with personal comments, which at that level you shouldn't do. You should have a thick skin. You're the pinnacle of the sport. So when there's criticism, it won't always be positive. You have to take the positive one and also the negative, and then figure it out. Understand why there was that criticism, and move on. You have to be bigger than that. And so I was a little bit surprised by the reaction, but ultimately he had his best weekend. But that's only one race out of the season, and he got a little bit lucky when everybody made mistakes in front of him, because it was going to look like a P11, so not even in the points. Now he got a few points home, so he can relax for a few races.
Well, I'm sure they'll be wanting you to make another comment going into Barcelona, so you can just get him going again. Do you think that's what happens with the Perez situation? A 2-year extension. I joked at the beginning of the show that I'm sure they're on the pit walls saying, let's go back to that fine print on the performance clause, because that was bloody dismal, wasn't it?
Well, there's two things with Perez. First of all, there's a lot of budgets from Mexico coming in, which is good as long as you still win the constructors. If you lose the constructors, you lose a lot of money as well. So it doesn't pan out with the sponsor money anymore. And also, they needed stability. They needed to keep Max happy. They needed to put the team back on a flat platform after the winter chaos. Mm-hmm. So I can understand why you would keep Perez. And even though he wasn't on pace with Max the other season, he wasn't too far off. He would still get seconds. But now it doesn't seem to be enough anymore. The car is not what it was. The car is difficult to drive, mainly because Max has to push it.
Yeah,
he didn't have to push it in the past. There was still a little bit of a margin with the opposition. Now he doesn't have that margin. He has to push to get to that level where Perez was already pushing on Max's level. So now Max is making a bigger difference. And that's not really good for the team, because psychologically it will just push Perez down, and that won't help him to get back to being a little bit more competitive.
And you can tell from the team communications that they really are working to make him, to give him everything he can, all the tools to get back up there. And all he has to do is just be running up in that top six. So we'll see what happens at the next race.
That goes back to what we said earlier about coaching.
Yeah.
You should not need to be pampered. One.
No.
And you're supposed to be at the top. You're supposed to be tough.
All right. Now time for the Mobile One Pit Stop for the love of driving. Jack, just a couple of very quick questions. Dry or wet conditions? What's your preference?
Depends. Depends how your car is. It always depends how the car is. If you have an amazing car, you don't want the wet. If the weekend is going bad, then you always believe that you'll make something special in the wet. And people think in the wet you see the good drivers. No, you also see which car is good. It's not the car grip has a huge effect on the wet. So it's a hard call, because you pray for wet and you get caught out, you crash and you look like an idiot. I've always enjoyed it when it was super wet, when you had almost aquaplaning. That's when it was fun. The car would slide, you had to catch it. When it was a drying track, intermediate days, when you only had full wets, that's when it was difficult, when you didn't need to drive on the wet line anymore.
Brilliant. For you, what was the most dangerous F1 track in the rain?
The most dangerous F1 track? I never thought about it that way. I couldn't even come up with an answer.
Okay, let's do another. What's the most challenging Formula One track you ever... What was the most challenge for you in at a Formula One track?
Yeah, the most challenging was always Monaco, because it was so different than the other ones. It was in between the walls. It was tiny. It was tight. There was no room for mistakes. So that was the biggest challenge. It was a lot.
Other than the era you were in, what other era do you think would have suited you? The 60s, 70s, 80s, or right now?
I was happy with the era I was in. I think the modern era would have been okay. I was always good on tire wear, tire management, fuel, and all that, which is very prominent with the modern era. So I probably would have been okay with that. Now, if I think about my dad's era, I would have loved driving those cars, but I would not have survived it. So not a good choice.
That's very honest. Now, you raced against some of the greats. Who did you just stand back and admire the most? I know it's tough when you're racing because you're a competitor, but who are you really proud that you raced on track against?
Well, I was very lucky because when I first started IndyCar, the first season there was Mario Andretti, there was Nigel Mansell, Emerson Fittipaldi, and these were all drivers I admired growing up, and I did manage to get to race against them, so there was nothing more special.
Yeah, you're very lucky. Anyway, well, thank you so much for that. Oh, one last one. You love your music. I know you've done a lot of performing. Does performing live in any way give you the same thrill as it did walking out onto the grid?
It was, yeah, when the little bit of performing I did, it was fun. It was a thrill. And a lot of people ask me, but aren't you scared? Don't you get the jiggies? And I said, well, no, what could go wrong? I'll sing off key. That's about it. We're in a race car. I can actually hurt myself. So I never had that issue. But it was exciting and fun. And the communication with the crowd was much more relevant than when you have a helmet in a race car.
Well, thank you so much. Great answers on the Mobile One Pit Stop. Well, thanks so much, mate, for coming on the show. It really was good. Hopefully it's not another 25 years. Are you going to come to Vegas?
No, let's do that quicker. Yeah.
Are you going to come to Vegas for the Formula One?
This year is not planned. Okay. It was amazing last year, but probably next year. I really want to go back to the race there.
All right. Well, let me know. Stay in touch.
Also because I got married there, so it is a bit of a special race weekend.
You should remember that. Yeah, they like
oh,
it.
Yeah,
when
oh,
you...
yeah. Getting married in the paddock in the chapel, that's I think that's not something that will happen often.
That's not. Well done. All right, mate. Thank you so much. Good luck. Well, I can feel it in the air. Ultimate Race Week at the Wynn Las Vegas is just around the corner, and it's in time for you to make plans to attend the 2024 Heineken Las Vegas Grand Prix. The racing, as you know, on the track last November was indeed electric with a whopping 82 overtakes. Pretty good. And race fans that stay here at Wynn Las Vegas are treated to a best-in-class Formula One hospitality experience like no other. There are multiple packages, all with different price points, available for purchase now at WynnLasVegas.com. The Grand Fan package covers three nights of accommodations right here at the Wynn Las Vegas, along with two F1 grandstand tickets and access to exclusive special events and amenities. The Wynn Grid Club package allows you to watch the race from the second floor of the paddock, right above the pit lane. It's crazy, guys. This ultra-exclusive hospitality suite features up-close views of turns 1 and 2 from a private outdoor terrace. It includes 5-star dining and beverages and a 3-night stay in either a Wynn or Encore Tower suite. So you got the gist of it. It's going to be amazing. So make your Ultimate Race Week reservations today. Head to WynnLasVegas.com. That's WynnLasVegas.com. Don't miss out, as last year was incredible and this year promises to be even better. Well, that was a real treat getting to talk to Jacques. Yeah, 25 years, a long time since the last time I spoke to him in person. Well, next up is the Circuit de Barcelona Catalunya. It's the home track for our Spanish drivers. So you know that Fernando Alonso, Carlos Sainz will want to feature very well there. It's one of those tracks you just heard Jack talk about. It's very fast, sweeping corners, really relies on that top speed, which falls into the domain of the Red Bull. And interesting, he should remind us that, you know, for Ferrari, the last racetrack probably was one they were favoring, but not so much in Barcelona. However, we've seen Formula One can go way upside down in the blink of an eye in one lap time, because everybody's coming to Barcelona with a ton of major upgrades, especially aero updates. And it does provide a bit of a crystal ball heading into the rest of the season, this next phase. But which of those top teams, McLaren, Mercedes, are going to be able to challenge the dominance of Max going into it. It's really about keeping the pressure on. But in response, Max Verstappen absolutely bloody loves being challenged on track. So you're not going to see him crack, but boy, we're going to have some great racing from it. We have five drivers really arguably in the running as we head into Barcelona. Max, obviously the threat. Lando Norris has that winning swagger, knows he has the potential to win. I'm very excited with their upgrades, what he's going to be like there. But so does Piastri. I mean, he is totally unintimidated by his slightly older teammate, and he is so ready to pounce if Lando missteps. Actually, he might not even wait for the misstep before he pounces. He might just jump in there, and that is no wonder that Zach is so proud of his drivers. Now, Ferraris, both drivers must be hurt, a little butt hurt from the result in Canada, and you know they're going to regroup. You know they're going to pop back. It's going to be, I don't think they'll be vying for podiums, though, but let's just see. But Mercedes, well, they are the ones that could be the big surprise going into this. I mean, who would have said a few weeks ago they would have been right there, but they're now a full contender for the podium. So I'm looking forward to that. Well, all that makes for a really great weekend. Keep the pressure on Max, and you never know what might happen. Don't make mistakes, and you'll put yourself into a position. And I really do hope, despite my hammering, that Sergio Perez is able to get his mind straight, because if he's in the seat, all we do is wish him the best. Do the best job you can and live up to the potential of that car. Anyway, guys, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much for watching Drive to Win, and huge thank you to Mobile One for the love of driving, and of course, to the Win Las Vegas for this beautiful studio space. I'll see you soon.